Hello everyone, welcome to the very first episode of the Make and Mental Health Matters podcast. I am Meenal.
And I'm Tamaya, and we're your hosts. So we're both interns with Making Mental Health Matters, and we're so excited that you're spending time with us today as we dive into the world of adverse childhood experiences, or also known as ACEs, and why they matter right here in Making Big.
But before we get started, let's introduce ourselves. I'm Meenal. I'm a rising junior at Wesleyan College, majoring in psychology and advertising and marketing communication.
And I'm Tamaya. I'm a rising senior at Mercer University, and I'm a history major along with art.
We also want to take a moment to thank the people who make this work possible. Huge shout out to Mrs. Parham and Mrs. Cook, our mentors, the amazing Make and Bib community, and of course, our guest today, Dr. Gloria Cisse.
And Dr. Cisse is a powerhouse at Making Mental Health Matters and a huge part of our ACE initiative. We're thrilled to have her here. So Dr. Cisse, could you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, ladies. I am Dr. Gloria Smith Cisse. I'm the CEO and lead therapist at the Southern Center for Choice Theory, and we power the Making Mental Health Matters initiative.
So let's start with the basics, Dr. Cisse. Mm-hmm. What exactly are ACEs and why should our listeners care about them?
So ACEs is an acronym for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And what that really is about the things that happen to an individual prior to the age of 18 that have a long-term or potentially have long-term negative impact on their well-being, their physical and mental health well-being, as well as their life expectancy. And why is it important for us to care about them? Because we've all had some form of ACEs, right? And for a community that is attempting to thrive and grow and do better, as we're caring about each other in our communities, and it's important for us to know that everyone sitting across from us has potentially had some form of adverse experience, and that adverse experience is impacting the way that they engage with everybody else. And so we can have a better community when we know what people's ACEs scores are, what things they've been exposed to, and then how we can prevent some of those things.
Sounds good. So we would also like to know how, like, did the concept of ACEs even come about, and what do the research and researchers say about the long-term effects?
So the original research was done by Dr. Andes and Felitti out in California. They were working at Kaiser Permanente. They were doing some research, right? They had a program where they were helping people to monitor their weight and things like that. And they discovered that there were some interesting little aspects of it, why people couldn't maintain their weight loss and so on and so forth. But anyway, and ultimately, they discovered that after they did some interviews, that it was childhood experiences, that folks had a lot of different childhood experiences that were impacting their well-being. They did that study, and ultimately the big study was 17,000 individuals, and they came up with these 10 things that they saw that many people had experienced, right, during their childhood that impacted their long-term well-being. And so what the research tells us is that the higher your score, the more impact it has on your mental health, your physical health. Like the higher a person's score, the more likely it is that they will have heart disease or their life expectancy will be decreased.
That sounds very interesting. Could you also give a few examples of common ACEs and how they might show up in everyday life?
Mm-hmm. So a common ACEs is having a family member who's gone to prison. Now we you know, a lot of us may think that that is not common, but there are a lot of people who live among us who have had a family member who went to jail or went to prison. And for a long time, I think that we didn't even include it as an adverse experience, you know, that a child would have to grow up without their mom because their mom was in jail, or without their dad because their dad was in jail. But it is a very common thing, right, that someone might not be around, or that someone close to you died that you really cared about, or that you experienced a medical problem when you were a young child. We don't, those things are kind of common, but we don't think of them as common because they don't happen to us or necessarily happen to us. And so how they show up is in, you know, our the human brain is so amazing that when we have a traumatic experience in our childhood, it impacts the architecture. It can potentially impact the architecture or the way that our brains are structured. So then we will have young people who go to school and they act out, right? And so oftentimes we want to diagnose them or say that they need a diagnosis because they're overly active. And when we know about traumas and ACEs, then we can start folding into our thinking that this is probably a response from a traumatic event that the kid has or events that the child has experienced. And so we see people differently when we see them through a trauma-informed, ACEs-informed lens.
So this is really knowledgeable and interesting on a broader scale, but can you bring this a little bit closer to home and explain why this work is so important here in Making BIB?
Yeah, definitely. So bringing it home is, you know, we are a part of the whole Making Mental Health Matters initiative is a part of the Making Violence Prevention initiative that we have in our community. And oftentimes we don't connect traumas with violence. And the actuality is that there is a direct correlation between some of the things that young people experience and then how they show up in the community. I was reading something by Dr. Perry the other day, where Bruce Perry, and he talked about how a child who has been exposed to some traumatic events during their developing years, those first 3 years of life, they can go to school and they can be what we might consider hypervigilant. And in actuality, we, you know, then get diagnosed with ADHD, and that might indeed be hypervigilance, right? And that's a trauma response. Or a child who may be stuck. I was doing some research on reactive attachment disorder and also learned some things that Dr. Perry had written that said that a child who's stuck in freeze, right? So the brain, when the brain perceives a trauma, whether it's real or it's just a perceived trauma, but it understands it as a trauma, then it will release the same hormones that tell you to prepare to fight, flight, or freeze. And so some people are in the fight mode. Some children are in the fight mode, and we know what they will do. They will act out physically. And some children are in the freeze mode. So as Dr. Perry indicated, it can look like resistance or defiance. And when we don't understand that this person has had some exposure to a negative circumstance, whether it's community violence or something that happened in their home, then we will label them as defiant, as opposed to this is a way of their trauma expressing itself. So when we wrap our minds around ACEs, right, and we combine it with the idea of reducing violence, then we know now that this may be the only way that this person knows how to express themselves. We then fold in opportunities for communities to learn how to engage with each other without using violence. We teach parents, we teach children, we teach organizations. Then we can ultimately reduce the violence that happens in our community.
Those are some interesting research findings. We also know that MMHM launched the first community-wide ACEs survey last year. What are some things that stood out for you from the responses?
Some of the things that stood out, and I'm going to go to the qualitative parts first before I go to the quantitative. If I'm remembering correctly, finding out that in a lot of instances, the person that children needed or found had been the most helpful in their lives were grandmothers, grandparents, or aunties, or some, you know. And so, but those individuals in our communities often get left out of the conversations when we are talking about supporting children and their long-term well-being, because the way it usually happens, I almost said assumption, but the way it usually happens is that children are in the care of their moms and dads versus someone, an extended family member. So we have to, from my perspective, what it said to me is that we have to target some things to people across the lifespan, not just information for children. And the other thing that really kind of stood out for me was our score of 4.07, right? And while some people would say on a scale of 1 to 10, that doesn't sound very bad, but if we look at the original research, any ACEs that a person experiences impacts, there has the potential to impact their long-term emotional and physical well-being. So our score is important. It may look low, but it's important. Plus, we don't know that anyone else has ever taken the pulse of the community as it relates to ACEs. So kind of puts us ahead of the game a little bit.
That's very nice to know and give us some background. So just going a little bit deeper than that, what inspired MHMs, or Making Mental Health Matters, to focus on ACEs at this point in time?
Well, as I mentioned before, we are part of the Making Violence Prevention. And so when we look at violence, we know that nothing happens in a vacuum, right? And because we also are very, very familiar with trauma and trauma-informed care, we know that things that happen in childhood have the potential to impact long-term care. And I don't believe that many of the organizations that are working to end violence in our community are looking at it from a primary prevention perspective, right? And so for us, it's like we can't just do tertiary prevention, which is, you know, try to stop the violence in the moment, but we got to do primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention at the same time so that we can do a good job of impacting not just in the short term, because we know the violence isn't going to change immediately. The incidences, although they do, it has been impacted. But if we want true change, we have to look at it across lifespan and across systems so that we can have a really significant impact.
Talking about our present day, you recently launched the second round of the ACEs community survey. What does it look like and what will the data help us do?
So this round, hopefully we will have more people who complete the survey, which will give us a deeper understanding of what our ACEs score really is in this community. And then I think the more people that we have who complete the survey, the better the understanding is. And then we can take this information and share it with the leaders in our community and help to get programming and funding for programming in our community.
So going kind of a little bit more into that idea of like support, what kind of partnerships in particular are you looking for and hoping to build this and strengthen this initiative?
We want partnerships with everyone in our community because mental health is the community issue, right? It should be the concern of everyone in our community. So, but we're partnering with organizations like River Edge and Family Counseling Center, Resilient Middle Georgia. We have lots of partners in the community. Sheriff's Department. Everyone is a part of our initiative, and so we hope that through these partnerships, we'll be able to gather more information.
And if someone is listening and wants to help, whether they are a resident, provider, or community leader, what's one thing that they can do today?
They can complete the survey themselves, first of all, and they can share it with, and I get bold about this, and like share it with 10 people you know, right? Put it on your social media. Do whatever it is that you can to help people get the word that the completing the ACEs survey is not, it's not going to hurt them. It is going to help all of us.
This has been such an eye-opening conversation, and I'm so glad you were able to join us today, Dr. Cisse. Your insight and time and the incredible work you're doing is very valuable, not only to us, but to the Macon community as a whole. So before we go, here are a few things.
So here's how you can get involved with this initiative. Take the anonymous survey. It does not take more than 15 minutes. Become a partner or learn more at www.maconmentalhealthmatters.com/ACEs.
And please, please be sure to follow us on social media, subscribe to this podcast, and leave us a review. It helps us grow, and it helps more people hear important conversations like this.